This is the Drunken Trail Podcast with your hosts, Nick Morose and Ethan Zook.
Welcome, everyone. We're back after a small little vacation. I am Nick Morose, and with me is my co-host, Ethan Zook.
Howdy.
Revelation I had. You know how you have shower thoughts?
Did you have a shower thought?
Yeah. Here it is. You are born a bill, and you'll die a bill.
I am so confused, and I feel like I should get this.
You should, actually. Okay, so you're charged for being born, and you're charged for dying.
Okay. I gotcha.
Damn, I could have made that like a Riddler thing. Like, ha-ha, Batman, think of this!
Yeah, you could have.
Oh, man. So, I was just sitting there. I'm like, man, because I was teasing my wife. I was singing A Circle of Life. And then I threw that lyric down and I was like, oh, shit, that's a little bit more profound than I meant it to be.
Yeah, I scared myself just a little bit.
Yeah. So what are you drinking?
So I have a beer tonight, but it's a special beer because it comes from a pretty local brewery called Hawksbill Brewing Company. They're based out of Luray, Virginia, or as we say there, Luray. We put the emphasis on the first syllable. This is called a Citrus Mistress IPA. It was brewed 6/25/21, and it has 6.8 ABV.
Okay. What's the notes? What does it taste like? It says citrus, so.
It's definitely got the citrus, a lot of hops. The citrus is especially on the second end, and it almost tastes like grapefruit. It's not like orange. It's like grapefruit.
You know, I thought I would like grapefruit stuff more, but I find out more and more in alcohol, I'm kind of like, meh. It's not, I'm not going to run away from it, but it's not as good as I hoped.
Yeah, I hear that. No, this is pretty good, though, and I'm especially happy with it since it's, you know, so local. Uh-huh. It actually took me a really long time to get over there. So I've been working in the town that this place is based in for like 3 years now, but they have such limited hours because it's Page County that, it's just really hard to get there while they're open. So I finally managed to get there one day while they were open, grabbed a couple beers and, really happy with it.
Well, that's good. I am drinking, one of the Mr. Beer batches.
Oh, nice.
If you haven't checked out, guys, we have a video about how to make it. So just definitely scope it. The one I brewed, though, because that's Diablo IPA is what you have. I have the Canadian Blonde Ale. And what was... So Mindy was like, oh, I thought you hate IPAs. I'm like, it's just an ale. Like, it's an ale. It went through an ale process. It's like, well, it's tomatoes. I was like, it's not tomatoes. It's definitely
it's not tomatoes.
Killing me.
But it's not an IPA.
I'm like, if I sit an IPA in this Canadian Blonde Ale and you drink both, you're gonna see, like, yeah, it's gonna be, you know, Christmas tree trimmings versus a malty citrusy ale,
right?
I know. The Canadians, the way they made their beer is that no matter if they hit a cold snap or a summer, it's right in between. It doesn't shift hard left or right on something. It's just right down the middle. You can enjoy it like not super cold. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do a drip super warm, but it's one of the most balanced beers I think out there.
So that's the beer that we tried while you were down here that wasn't quite ready, right?
Yeah, it's finally conditioned. I sent you a picture today to show you like, hey, it's finally conditioned. Look at all those bubbles and...
Yeah, I saw that. I could hear those bubbles.
Really? That's what Samantha said.
Yeah. No, I could hear it. Like, it was whatever kind of audio system you were using on that was good enough that I could hear the bubbles.
My phone. I'm trying to get it toward the camera. The background thing keeps on taking it away. But, yeah, you could see the bubbles are still working. It doesn't keep that foamy top, but that's all right. It's an ale. It's not going to keep too much. Usually, you know, they'll dissipate after a little bit. But... You can definitely still see the carbonation. It's working just fine. The next one I'm probably going to check out is the recipe for Carboy. But a little reminder out there for everybody who homebrews, don't forget to do your Oktoberfest batch, because you want to have it ready. And if you do it, start thinking about it now, and you do it and get it, you know, conditioned, it'll be more than ready for October. So I'm going to be doing a Hefeweizen for that. Or I'm sorry, no, a Bavarian Weissbier. So I'll be doing that for Oktoberfest.
So what are the actual like rules for having an Oktoberfest brew?
I don't know if there actually is any, except for the fact you just want to have your German beer ready. I mean, they have a special mix of, you know, that's known for being an Oktoberfest flavor, a fall flavor, something that's good for the cold, something that's drinkable throughout the day and evening, that you can have with your food. Because if it's too heavy, it's not going to be a fun time, especially with the heavy foods that usually are associated with Oktoberfest. So I would imagine that something that you can have with, you know, Spatzel and your schnitzel, and what else is there? The applesauce. There's the of course, bratwurst, sauerkraut. I'm starting to sound like I'm making Rammstein lyrics here, but so it's those are the things that you want to be able to drink with your beer. So it's not, it's to me, it's a little on the bitter side usually, and it's maltier, but it's not a heavy malt, and it's usually an amber color. As far as the brewing process, I think it's more of an ale than it is a lager.
I gotcha. So I actually, while we were talking, I promise you, I wasn't trying to like set you up for anything. I was just honestly curious.
No, that's fine.
But I actually went into Google to see if there are any kind of like regulations for what kind of beer they have to serve at Oktoberfest. And it turns out there are actually some rules.
Oh, really? What is it? Okay. So what do we got?
Okay. So this comes from Oktoberfesttours.travel. All right. And it's the beer drinking law of Oktoberfest. I'll send you the link here really quickly as well, if I can. Sorry. You can trim down some of this pause if you'd like to.
The background clicks.
Yeah, sorry.
No,
seriously, fact checked it. All right, so this comes from 2015, but it says, as with the greatest celebration of anything in life, there are rules. And as we know, the Germans love their rules. So the strict regulations on what is served at Oktoberfest come down from the German Brewers Federation, and beers must contain only malted barley, yeast, hops, and water.
Well, that's the,
that's pretty much all of it.
Yeah. But
that, what that means is you're not getting wheat beers, for instance. So this law apparently originates in 1487. It was enacted in law all the way back in 1516. It is called a purity law. And in German, that's pronounced apparently Reinheitsgebot.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the law of, they call it something a little different now. I mean, you don't say Reinheitsgebot. It's like the, they named it after the area it originated from.
Right. But basically, there are some rules. Like, you can't just have any beer at Oktoberfest. It has to be, you know, like, so we can't have, for instance, our American Pilsners, which contain a lot of rice, for instance, would not be welcome at Oktoberfest.
Yeah, which, don't get me started on. I mean, it's an interesting thing they made it out of rice, but I'm still a little, like, why?
Yeah. So I'm actually looking at beerandbrewing.com, which is a fantastic place for recipes, and I'm finding some. So here's a this is a German beer. It's a pale lager. It's called the Sternweisse Dortmunder. That looks really good, actually, and it doesn't look very hard to make.
Did you mention that it's just the Bavarian law?
Yeah, so okay. that's like you know, Bavaria.
Yeah, it's basically what the whole Reinheitsgebot. I don't know why my brain froze. I was like, it's Bavaria, but I'm like, I don't want to be wrong, so I wanted to double check before I said anything.
Yeah. Well, those Germans and their rules.
Well, so my Weissbier, then I thought I'd be all right, but I guess I'm not. I gotta cook that off and then start looking to get the Oktoberfest.
Yeah, man, you got to get on it there, or else the Bavarians are going to be very upset with you. Yeah. And we know what happens when the Bavarians are upset with you, yeah?
The safe word is Reinheitsgebot.
Friegel Krugel.
For those of you who don't know, that's a Euro trip reference.
Yes.
If your name is Scotty, I'm sorry.
Scotty doesn't know.
Although, you know what? Hey, shout out to Scotty Crow, who made our awesome mascot. And it's going to be pretty soon that we are going to have merch with our weasel on it. It looks was inspired by Hunter S. Thompson, which is perfect. Absolutely perfect for the kind of guys that we are, as far as what, you know, at least represent, I suppose.
You know, offering people merch with your weasel on it just sounds wrong. So we should actually explain that our new logo has a weasel, like a drunken weasel smoking a cigar.
With a beer?
With a beer. All right. So this isn't perverted. This is like our logo now. It's our little mascot.
Check it out.
This just doesn't sound good.
It'll be on drunkentrail.com. You won't need your safe for work filter on or anything like that.
he is wearing clothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, it's that just based off of Hunter S. Thompson. You could, if you saw Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, it's based on that look. So, you know, hashtag backcountry. It just turned out really good. It turned out awesome. I can't wait to start making some merch designs. We already have some mock-ups of some shirts. Guys, if we'll probably do an early intro sale and make it to where just get our names out there, where basically we'll only make a dollar or two on it, and then we'll push it up and then maybe have a Black Friday sale. I'm really hoping that we'll have all that up, because I don't foresee us not having our merch ready for the holidays.
Yeah, so basically what he's saying is get in early, because you're going to get a better deal if you get in early.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you'll be an influencer. It's awesome.
For real, for real. And hey, if you see us, if you know us from the videos and you see us around, like sometimes I go up to Orlando and Universal and you want to say, hey, I want to take a picture of this guy that barely anybody knows, I'll do it. I'll pose with the merchandise and all that.
They're way more likely to see you than see me.
I'll sit there and be like, whip the weasel out.
Oh, man. That's funny, but damn.
That's going to be our thing. Copyright, trademark, restricted, whatever. Whip the weasel out. And then drunkentrail.com. All right. So we got our plans for Oktoberfest. We got our merchandise coming out. We got there's some other things we're doing. Videos. We got a promo video that came out. We're on TikTok, finally. Like we said, we're going to do, we got, let's see, we got other videos we're going to be doing. I'm going to retry to do the soap. Tad Seralta had, contacted me and he was just like, man, where is the soap? You know, I've been looking for the soap. I really like the soap, because I gave him some of the soap that I made out of beer. And he's like, I really want to try this. So, we'll be reattempting that. You got that cool cocktail coming out.
Yes. Yes, we do. And we actually have finished filming that. I just need some time to edit the video, which probably means I'll do it tomorrow, because I've got a work shift tomorrow. And when I'm sitting around waiting for calls, that's one of the things I do. So probably put that together and get it out there tomorrow.
I saw a joke someone put down. It was like, I think it was either Uber driver or something like that. It's like we all have those times where it's like, oh, this guy again, and then this EMT guy commented right afterwards and said, yeah, me too.
Yeah, so it was he was talking to the Amazon driver.
Amazon,
so
like, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, the Amazon delivery driver is like, oh god, this house again, and an EMT commented and was like, yep, can confirm the ambulance is the same, and I'll just say he's absolutely right.
I know you had those stories too.
Oh yeah, I've had. We call them frequent flyers, and there are patients that I know by name.
It's like, like the putting Cheers on the side of your ambulance.
Oh yeah, you know, where everybody knows your name. Absolutely.
Have you ever listened to those lyrics of Cheers, like the actual lyrics of those things? Because at first, it's like one of the ones that was kind of like, wait, what? It said when your husband thinks he's a girl or something like that. Like, check out those lyrics. I'll pull up.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, it's like, oh, you go to the bar because that's happening to you. And when you're, let me look at the Cheers theme lyrics. Cause I was just like, Samantha likes the song, and as a kid, I always hated it. I heard it, and I knew it was going to be that boring show.
Yeah, so I never really watched that show, to be honest with you.
I thought Three's Company was better, but hey.
I mean, there's a whole, like, part of pop culture from about 1990 until about 2000 that I pretty much completely missed out on. So
you probably catch a lot of it off of Pluto. They've been showing all sorts of, you know, old stuff.
You're probably right.
Let me see here. I'm trying to find. Oh, man, where's. Where is it at? Because they do all these different. Oh, yeah, yeah. And your husband wants to be a girl. That's the lyric. Roll out of bed, Mr. Coffee's dead. The morning's looking bright, and your shrink ran off to Europe and didn't even write, and your husband wants to be a girl.
Well, okay, then.
And I was just like in the car while she's like, yeah, cheers song. I'm like, the hell is. Man, all right.
Whatever. Well, that's not what I expected.
Yeah, yeah. And see, that's the thing. Drunken Trail still on topic. This is record for me. 15 minutes, 16 minutes in, and I'm still on topic with drinking themed items.
We still haven't found out though what you're drinking tonight.
Oh, I did. I said the Canadian.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you did. I'm sorry. No, it was so quick. You know, normally it's more elaborate.
Well, I got into the whole bubbles thing because I was finally happy it was conditioned. And I was like, bubbles! And there you go. I was thinking about taking on the s'mores cocktail, which is in that one test video I put on. But it's also featured in the promo video. And throwing up how to make that. Because at first, I just sat there and I looked at Samantha. I was like, you know, it'd be kind of good as a s'mores cocktail. And it was reflective of what we were talking about when we were up in Virginia and how we made that one really cool cocktail for Melissa. And I was like, you know, what would that be like? So I started make it into my head and I looked up to see if anybody made it. And it was very close to how they made theirs. And I was like, all right, let's do it. And so it's basically it combines itself a heck of a lot like you would a White Russian. Except you shake it. So you get your ice in your shaker. You're going to put in some ingredients into the shaker that are half and half. I don't have the measurements in front of me, so. But it's half and half. It is Godiva liqueur and vodka. And the Godiva liqueur, of course, all that stuff just mixes all together. You shake it up, throw it in there, throw some whipped cream. You get graham cracker, crush it, garnish the whipped cream, put some chocolate syrup. And then you garnish again with a toasted marshmallow and piece of chocolate
and so, gotcha.
And an Irish cup. So it doesn't hit hard. It's very sweet, even though it has the vodka. And then I think if off the top of my head, I want to say it's 1 ounce, 1.5 ounce of vodka, 1 ounce of Godiva and 1 ounce of the half and half, because the half and half I think really blends the Godiva into the vodka, while as the chocolate martini kind of lets it just sit there.
Nice.
It's a neat thing.
That is pretty cool,
but it's very frou-frou-y, very, you know, present, like it's very much a holiday drink or a cool summertime, you know, fancy drink that, I mean, it's not gonna knock you out, but it's gonna be fun.
That's pretty awesome. And, you know, it's exactly the kind of drink that Mel likes. You know, she either likes things that are kind of chocolatey or she likes things that are like tropical. Yeah. So might have to do that sometime.
I'll go and double check the measurements just to make sure I wasn't crazy. But I remember writing them down, but I'm not positive that I wrote them down correctly. I just want to make sure. So I'll try it out and then see what happens. But I'm going to start phasing more into wine, actually, because I realized we kind of neglected wine over these episodes a little bit. Like, we've had it, but we haven't really talked too much about it. So we're going to have a guest, so long as I lock down the time frame and when we can all three meet up. And it's Dennis Mallon. Dennis Mallon is an actor, producer, and he's also a graduate of the, from what he told me, a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America out of New York. He had some bartending experience and, always wanted to kind of become a sommelier before he got into acting.
Oh, nice. So,
you might even see him in the background in the Devil's Advocate in one of the court scenes. And then, of course, he's gone on and done some other things that I'll list later on when he's on the show. But we're going to generally talk about, his appreciation of wine, his appreciation for pipe tobacco, since we all smoke pipes. He's like, oh man, we should talk about tobacco. So he's very excited to check that out. And I just have to see when we can all lock it in, and that should be a fun episode.
That sounds awesome. I'm going to be kind of a fly on the wall during some of these conversations, because I'll be honest with you, I don't know much about some of these things.
Well, I mean, you have experience with pipe tobacco and wine, so you can at least speak to.
That is true. I can say I like it a lot. Yeah,
you can name a few varieties, I know.
Yeah, that's true.
He likes Malbec, and I was like, I can't tell you what's the specifics of Malbec right now. I'm like, that sounds like an Argentinian wine. Is it an Argentinian wine? I can't see.
He likes that. I'm a Cabernet Sauv guy. I don't know what you are.
I currently am. Actually, hold that thought. I'm going to pause it and get it. I'll be right back.
And fill up your glass.
Time to fill your glass. The Drunken Trail will be right back.
And we're back. Okay. For some reason, when I hit record, it disappeared. But now I see that we're actually recording. So, Chianti and Cabernet Sauvignon is with... I'm with you on that as far as the caps off. One of the bottles I wanted to bring up... two of the bottles I wanted to bring up. One I don't have with me is the Cake Bread. Cake Bread is phenomenal. Velvety. Just... exquisite wine, and you're going to pay an exquisite price. But if
this isn't one of your Costco picks, in other words,
no. However, I did find my Beringer Founders Estate Cabernet Sauvignon, which is more of a table wine variety, but it's really good. You'll find it in restaurants like Carrabba's, and they'll charge you pretty much what you can buy a bottle. So save yourself some money and get yourself some Beringer Cabernet Sauvignon Founders Estate Edition, I guess is what you would call it. But it's a really good Cabernet Sauvignon. And they're like, well, what's the difference? What's that going to taste like? Well, some are sweeter, some are lighter, some are going to be almost more candy-like. You know, some are going to be full body. And what they mean by that is no different than when you get a beer or if you get a tequila that was buttery. It's not, it's not light on the palate. But this is... dark, like you could tell it's like black red. You really have to throw light on it to make it go red. Otherwise, it just looks just straight up dark.
Sounds amazing.
Oh, it's really good. It's not expensive. It's just good. So I really, really recommend that. And let's see, what else is there? And the cake bread. That's it. Yeah, the cake bread. Chianti, I would recommend. I cannot find for the life of me. I found it one time. I bought it on sale at a German restaurant. They had this huge wine sale, and it was in the Volusia Mall. And I was just like, cool, this is awesome. Let me go in there. So I walk in there, and they have all these wines, and I get this Chianti, and I was like, man, this is fantastic. And of course, this is when I'm in college, so I don't think to save the label, and never found it again. But it was a Chianti with a cranberry aftertaste. Like dry finish. It was awesome. Chianti's are normally dry, but that one especially was really good.
But that's amazing.
So what is your, you got any favorites?
Oh boy. So, my favorites, I'll be honest with you, are not going to sound nearly so classy, I think is the right word for it. When it comes to Cab Sav though, one of my favorites recently has been the bourbon barrel aged Cabernet.
Yeah.
The Robert Mondavi stuff that actually you introduced me to.
Yeah.
I can pretty reliably find that around me. It's finally made it up here, and I've really been enjoying that. There's been another one that I've been getting from Martin's recently, and I can't remember the name of it, but it is Canadian.
Really?
And yeah, so I think actually the last episode that we did, before you guys came up and visited, when we talked about the Whiskey Rebellion, I was actually drinking it then. And I'll have to figure out what name that is and send it to you at some point, because I can't remember it off the top of my head. I finished the last bottle I had of it, and it's gone at this point. I put it in the recycling.
That's the problem. It's like some of these wines are so good, you forget what they were because there's like you're focused on the flavor, and you can't really say that about many liquors and beers and so on. Like,
yeah, well, and see, I can remember what the bottle looks like, and I can totally walk into the store and get another bottle of it, but I couldn't tell you what it is off the top of my head.
Yeah. So I sent you the link for the cake bread if you ever want to check it out. It's wicked. Phenomenal. And how I came across it was I accidentally ordered the wrong thing at a restaurant, which I remember you telling you the story. And they brought it out. I just remember the waitress was like she's like, oh, very good choice. And I'm like, it's just a table.
Okay.
Well, it's just a table wine, but I guess it's you like it a lot, huh?
Right.
And she brings it out, and I noticed she brought out a Chardonnay, and I was like, oh, no, you don't chill this one. This is that a Chardonnay you have there? I was looking for the Cabernet Sauvignon, and because that's something that Samantha would be okay with. And so she's like, oh, that's right. Let me go back. It's a good thing I didn't uncork it. I'm like, yeah. She comes back, pops the bottle because I just bought the bottle. I get my bill, and I'm like, huh? Because the first thing that hit me, I'm like, man, this is a really good bottle of this. Never even looked at the label because I was already half tossed anyway. And I go ahead and I get the bill, and I was just like, all I had was tapas. What the hell is this $100-some bill? And yeah, sure enough, it was like $175. And they didn't really mark it up all that much, you know, considering what you could buy it for. So I was impressed with that. It goes for $70 off the website. You may be able to get it around a little bit less than that. But like in the local store that I showed you, the ABC liquor store, they have it under glass.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, I don't know if it deserves to be under glass. But I mean, it's only $10 more than a freaking video game. So it's $70.
Right.
So if you bought a video game new, that is. But anyway, yeah, it's a really good wine. It's one of those things, if you feel like splurging, and you know Cabernet Sauvignon, you know you're going to like that kind of variety, go get it. It's great.
Yeah. I find Cab Savs are flavorful without being overly sweet, which is kind of where I'm at. That's kind of what I like about it. I find it's a really versatile wine, too. So, like, I can, you know, drink it while I'm just hanging out and, you know, having dessert. I can also drink it with a meal, and it goes really well there, too.
And that's the thing. You know what? I should actually have you just describe the wines from now on, because that was the best way you could possibly describe it. Because me, I'm just like, it's grapey.
Yeah. And like, especially the bourbon smoke or the barrels that are, you know, bourbon barrels give it a nice, like, kind of rich but smoky flavor. So I really like that, too. Now, I am also a whiskey drinker, so that might be part of it. You know, I drink whiskey and smoke cigars, so obviously smoky things are kind of in my wheelhouse. But hey, what can I say?
Oh, that's the thing. It's like it's so delectable, like the new fad. This is one of the few times where I'm like, this fad was a good idea. The fact that they started putting these wines into whiskey barrels to see what would happen, and they turned out really good, not taking on the whiskey as much as they were taking on the smokiness of the charred barrel.
Right.
And incidentally, when the whiskey has been doing that in the opposite direction, where the whiskey actually goes into a different type of barrel, like, for example, the cider cask variety from Tullamore Dew, when they did that with that Irish whiskey, it took on the little bit of the flavor of the cider and the barrel. So I kind of like, I'm surprised that the whiskey would actually be overpowered or blend in more with the flavors of the barrel than wine would be.
Well, and they've been putting it in other barrels too. So there are some whiskeys out there that they've been aging in sherry casks, you know, sherry being a sweet wine. it's going in other directions too. So, you know, I mentioned the Robert Mondavi series earlier, which is a California wine. They've been making other wines and aging them in different types of barrels as well. So for instance, I saw a, what was it? I think it was a Merlot or something, that was aged in rye barrels, barrels that had rye whiskey in it. I saw a white wine recently. So Melissa really likes, white wine. And so I saw a Petit Blanc, Robert Mondavi Petit Blanc that had been aged in, I think it was rye barrels as well. So they've been applying that to not just Cabernet. It does make me think of another Cabernet that I like though. There is a brand called the Federalist. Have you tried the Federalist yet?
No, I did not. Cause at first I was like, oh, isn't that the Jefferson one? But I was like, no.
Yes. Okay. So the Jefferson Vineyards wine that we had when you came down and visit was a whole different thing. That was not Cab, but the Federalist is a new, I think it's also Californian, and they have a really good Cabernet too. It's usually 2 or 3 years old. It's about $16 to $20 a bottle. So not very expensive, but definitely above your average. And I find it's really easy to drink as well.
Man, there's so much stuff that has been coming out, and the inventiveness. I'm kind of wondering what in the world are we going to find after, COVID kind of made people stay inside. So all these guys that these, I guess you would say, the brewmasters and the wine blenders. I don't know what they call that. I know it's brewmasters for beers, but what in the world is a wine blender?
I think they call them vinters.
Vinters. Thank you. That makes sense. so, wow. I'm just on all cylinders today. I wonder what they've been kind of thinking about, just sitting there like, okay, I can't do anything. What can I do? Well, I could think of ways that this can blend with this. So what kind of varieties are we going to get in the future?
I mean, I'm pretty excited about it. And I think it's such a great, change. So we had the rosé summer a couple years ago where it's just like everyone was like, oh my God, rosé. And we're all, for me, it's like, okay, rosé is kind of a throwaway wine, but I'm really excited to see what they come up with as well, especially since we're trending in the direction away from like rosés and little girly shit. Yeah, Mel is giving me the grossed out face when I mentioned rosé. Speaking of wine, remember how a minute ago I was telling you that I had found a really great wine that I couldn't remember the name of?
Yeah.
So you just sent me that link for that fairly inexpensive Cabernet that you like.
Yeah.
And I just typed in Cabernet Sauvignon into the Instacart thing, looked at all their options, and I found the bottle I was telling you about.
Oh, okay. Which one do you...
So it's the Chateau Souverain. It's Canadian. Oh, I'll send you a link here.
I think I remember you mentioning that.
Yeah, it's a black label. It's delicious. I love it. And it is not that expensive. I've been getting it at Martin's, which we still have around here.
Yay.
But the Cabernet Sauvignon from Chateau Souverain, and I think I did mention it on the air with you the other day, but it's been really, really good and really, really tasty, and I really enjoyed it.
Nice. Now, rosés can come in all sorts of varieties. I mean, if you get like a blush type wine where it's not really a rosé, it's not really. Yeah,
and I'll admit, I'm punching down pretty hard there. I'm definitely sort of hitting the low-hanging fruit, so to speak. But it did kind of blow my mind how popular rosé became that one summer.
Yeah, and it is kind of a summer wine. And unless you're going to go for the traditional Beaujolais Nouveau for your Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah. Mel is insisting that it's just like rose-flavored. She says it's just Zinfandel that's rose-flavored. She's saying it's not anything new. We drank it in college.
No, it's rosés are not new. They've been around forever. They are white wines with a little bit of the red grape skin left in to create that rosé taste and function. Now, not all rosés are created equal. If you look at the rosé that I have in my fridge right now from San Sebastian, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where just like anything else, you can get whiskeys or whatever. It's going to, you're going to have the variety of all the above.
Yeah. And that's why I say I'm punching down a little bit. I'm sure there's good rosés out there. I was just remembering walking through Target last summer and being like, oh, look at this. There's just like 10 varieties of $4 a bottle rosés with like gold party girl writing on it. And it's just like, this is sad. Find something better. Have some respect for yourself. Have some respect for what you drink. Drink something better.
Incidentally, speaking of Instacart, one of the things I saw, with they had a really good price on the Behringer's Founders Estate Cabernet Sauvignon. You can get a whole bottle for $7. So
yeah, I saw that. That's actually what sent me off in the direction of looking for the other thing.
Yeah. And currently we're actually trying to get an Instacart affiliation. So we'll have a link for that as soon as we can.
Nice.
If you use that and use Instacart, they'll get you a deal. So essentially, if we can get that, we'll be able to give you free delivery on your first order over $35. If you don't know Instacart already, they basically do all the shopping for you without all the hassle and free up your time to do whatever else you want, like listen to our podcast.
Yeah, you should listen to our podcast. Actually, even more importantly, you should be listening to our podcast while you're browsing Instacart.
Boom. So,
I mean, there you go. Kick a couple, you know, deal with a couple things at once.
Yeah, the only reason why I haven't already gotten our affiliated program started is ran into a couple of errors, but I'll fix those up and then we'll be good to go.
So we're even like giving them a endorsement before we're even in a relationship with them. How nice are we?
I know. Even with Mr. Beer, when they didn't return my email, they should have, but oh well. You can check them out. I'm going to check out other ways to brew beer as well. So you'll see that on our videos. And we'll talk about the results on the podcast because we want you to do both. Can't be just on one or the other.
Incidentally, I will be so some of you might have seen the, I guess, video that we did about brewing beer while Nick was up here visiting. And we're almost at the point where I can start bottling that stuff.
Yeah, conditioning is something else. Now, that's something like how to do it with the drops is pretty easy. You might want to show them how to do it with like regular table sugar so they know like which both ways should look like. I will say a funnel with table sugar is going to be your best friend.
No doubt.
And then using an instrument, I have an instrument that you hook into the spout. And what it does is it essentially just, you just push it and then it starts filling from the bottom up. But the way that you're probably going to end up doing it is you can use cheesecloth, which will help out a lot. And you can drain it through the cheesecloth through a funnel into the beer bottle. And what that'll give you is not a lot of that yeast trap, that I forget what they call it, like trump or something like that. I don't know. Stuff you don't want.
So I think for my purposes, I'm probably just going to do it with the tablets to start out with, since this is the first time that I've done it. But we might do the table sugar one on a subsequent run of something else. I've got some other plans too.
Sounds good. All right. So now, on current events, we got a bunch of people launching themselves up in the space.
And unfortunately coming back.
Yeah. I saw that joke.
That's the big part of the story, that they're coming back.
The fact that they're also they don't see the optics or the irony of just going like getting done with a pandemic. Everybody is just scraping by for the most part, or they just lost their job, or they're on the verge of losing their house or all this other stuff. And they're just like, yay, I'm going to go up into space. Fuck you. And then Amazon has the nerve to Bezos has the nerve to sit there and thank his Amazon workers and shoppers.
I saw that, and I just about spit my drink out.
Yeah, like, he totally didn't even understand why that was a bad idea. Like, hey, you do realize Amazon flourished during the pandemic because we were locked in, most of us anyways. And, yeah.
Because that was the only option we had, and also we were trying to, like, you know, shop our feelings away. And then this walking dick wearing a hat, because that's what he looked like.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see the picture of them wearing a cowboy hat?
And he had cowboy boots, too. And then they, for some reason, in their, I thought their spacesuits were like, you know, you like their onesies, right? They don't have a pant and a jacket, right?
Well, I think it depends. You know, they might have been wearing flight suits and then had a jacket over top. But let's be very clear about several things. So first of all, just because you can wear a cowboy hat and cowboy boots, this does not mean that you look cool. Not everyone can pull off cowboy boots and a cowboy hat. All right. So that's take number one. Take number two, though, you might be a dick if your net worth increased by billions of dollars while everyone else in the country suffered. And then after you put millions of your money into flying randomly to the edge of space instead of helping the people that work for you, you turn around and thank the employees that you fucked over to get there, you might be a dick.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing, because it's like, I'm trying to figure out, well, the reason why I brought up the flight suit is the fact that they all had belts on, and I was trying to figure out what they were holding up, because I was like, it's a flight suit. You don't have belts on a flight suit. What the hell? Why do they have belts? It looks weird.
And they didn't look too carefully at what their uniforms were.
Well, I brought it up because I was looking for belts for myself, and then the one belt company's like, hey, we didn't even ask them to do that. They just did it, and it's GP6 belts. And
of course.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, those overcharged belts that, I mean, yeah, they're cool, but you overcharge like crazy for those things. They're web belts. I don't know why you're charging so much. And, yeah, they were all like, woohoo. And I'm like, no, GP6, you should have been like, don't talk about it. Don't talk about it. Don't talk about it.
So I found an article here from New York Times saying what Jeff Bezos and crew wore to space. But I'll be honest with you, it's behind a paywall and I can't look at it. So I'm looking at something now from the Daily Beast that says it's called My, That's a Snug Fitting Spacesuit Jeff Bezos is Wearing, which is just, you know, all the better to show off my dick. His dick being his entire body, not his actual penis. But it says he will not wear a true spacesuit for his mission this week, but he will look the part, a desire seemingly shared by all the rich men aiming for the final frontier. And so it's basically saying his quote-unquote spacesuit is mostly for show.
Yeah, because they don't, all of them pretty much, it didn't really go to space. They just went into upper atmosphere.
This is the best opening to a article ever. I'm going to just read you this paragraph. This is by, let's see, this is on the Daily Beast. It's by Elena Demiopoulos. All right, so kudos to them. And it says, quote, in what might be the most expensive midlife crisis in history, Amazon founder Jeff Bezos heads to space this week. Instead of using his mind-boggling, record-breaking wealth to fix or at least alleviate the compounding crises on Earth, the 57-year-old oligarch has decided to don a cute blue suit and shoot himself into the atmosphere to cause more problems up there, end quote.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I can only imagine. Wow. I mean, it's just, it's unfair. And I was really disappointed that Richard Branson thought that was a good idea, because usually he's trying to be more one of the people, even though he's rich as fuck. Yeah. And yet, he was like, oh, I'm going to do this. Yay. It's like, no. So, yeah, between him, Elon Musk, and Richard Branson. And the worst part about it is the fact that his rocket looked like a dick for Bezos.
Oh, yeah.
And then because he's bald, they made the association with Dr. Evil, because in Austin Powers, it was the exact same thing. He went up in a dick ship.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. It was ridiculous.
Oh, it's so bad.
This article just keeps getting better and better.
What does it say now?
Okay, so all right. Bezos's love of tight clothing can only be matched by his disdain for paying federal taxes. The New York Times called him a, quote, style icon, end quote, and apparently was not joking. Quote, Mr. Bezos has gone from a pleated pants, sweatshirt wearing smurf to muscled up black polo shirt and shades, digi-stud, end quote, Vanessa Friedman wrote in 2018. So his Blue Origin team picked an outfit that matches his divorced dad sensibilities. It's a little Top Gun in its shape, tapered at the waist and butt. There's a feather, his space company's logo stamped on the back of the jumpsuit, because branding. There's a rocket ship insignia patch on the front chest. It looks like a Halloween costume for the super rich. One scientist who did not want to be identified by name told me the look resembles, quote, pajamas, end quote, not a real suit by NASA standards.
Yep, that is a really good way of saying it.
Yeah, and it's totally a dick spaceship. If you want to watch the part of Austin Powers that you know, Nick is referring to, all you have to do is go to YouTube and look for Austin Powers penis spaceship or dick spaceship.
Oh man, everybody was like, hey, I remember that.
Yep. That privates.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, that looks just like Primate. Get over here.
Exactly. Incidentally, this may be the episode that we've ever said penis the most often on an episode. And now we're really explicit.
Oh, yeah. Gotta love it. Gotta love it. So, you know, speaking of just crazy, stupid shit, the fact that the one Olympian who I'm looking for it now while we were talking, because I the problem is there's so many different Olympic, like, oh, my God, that happened scenarios, like the Norwegian women's beach handball team, not volleyball, but handball team, mm-hmm. was chastised for not wearing bikini bottoms and were wearing shorts, but they're basically like yoga shorts. I'm like,
yep.
And then you had the cardboard box issue with apparently their beds were made out of cardboard boxes.
Yep.
And
did you read the reasoning behind why the beds were made from cardboard?
They were afraid of them fucking a lot. And apparently
pretty much.
The Japanese were like, what? You can't fuck a lot. I'm like, do you not know your own porn and panty vendors?
Well, and on top of that, so the craziest thing about that is they were like, yeah, if we make them out of cardboard, they'll only hold one at a time. And one of the American, like, long distance runners was like, shoot, that shouldn't be a problem. We're all light enough that four of us would fit in that bed without a problem.
And that's, yeah, that. And then the other thing is, too, is they're like, some people that actually worked at the Olympics started to comment on certain articles or certain threads. And one of them's like, yeah, I remember it was really surreal because I was just doing my job, doing a patrol on around. I forget where it was, but they said they saw like somebody out in the field screwing right out in the open. It wasn't even trying to be hidden. They're just like, okay, I guess this is happening.
Diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, it's like they're going to do what they're going to do. And I think the worst one, or well, the hypocritical thing of that is just obnoxious. But the weird thing about it was the, again, running into weed is a drug.
A performance-enhancing drug.
Performance-enhancing drug.
So here's the thing. Okay, so let me preface this by saying I used to be an athlete. It's been a very long time, but I used to run cross country and track and field. Okay, so here's the thing. Athletes of that caliber know everything that they're going to be tested for. Okay, mm-hmm. It's not like it's a surprise where they walk in, sit down, and they were like, okay, today we'll be taking your urine, and surprise, here's what we're going to be searching for. And they start pulling shit out of a hat. they know, athletes of this caliber know what the drug testing process is. They know what kind of stuff they're going to be tested for. Mm-hmm. And it's very clearly laid out what they are and are not allowed to have in their systems. This isn't just an arbitrary, like, oh, we found THC in your piss and we're going to decide to smack your wrist over that. They have a list of everything that they're allowed and not allowed to have in their system. And so the thing for me is, in sport, it's not about whether you agree with the rule or not. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not like a football player gets to decide, you know, oh, well, I don't think it's that big of a problem for me to grab my opponent's face mask and use that to tackle them. It's just that that's against the rules. And if you want to play football, you got to know that you're not allowed to grab your opponents by the face mask and drive them into the ground. All right. It's illegal. It's against the rules. As a cross country runner, I knew that it was illegal for me to have, you know, performance enhancing substances or blood doping products in my system at competition levels. And I knew that I was subject to drug testing and other performance enhancing drug testing anytime I competed at a certain level or above. Now, it doesn't matter whether I agreed with those measures or not. Those were the rules. And so I think there's two conversations we can have here. The first conversation is whether or not it's fair that she got, and we're talking about, I forget her name, but she's an American sprinter. She qualified for the Olympics with one of the fastest ever, like 200 meter or 400 meter times, was blood tested. They found THC in her system and they subsequently disqualified her. And I think there's two conversations to have here. The first qualification or conversation is THC a performance enhancing drug? And I think we can all say no. That it's not.
Unless you're like cleaning your house like I do.
Right. And so I think there is a conversation to be had about whether or not, because THC is not a performance enhancing drug, should it be something that is possible for somebody to be disqualified over? And I think the answer should be no.
Yeah, because I don't think caffeine's on there or alcohol.
Large levels of caffeine are on there.
Large. Okay. Because I knew caffeine actually is a performance enhancer, but also...
So back when I used to run cross country, and this was granted a long time ago, and I was never blood tested because, frankly, I was not talented enough to be in the level that where it would have mattered. I could have used performance enhancing drugs.
There's that white boy running again. I don't know why he's there.
It wouldn't have
there.
Made enough of a difference to where, you know, it would have mattered. So I never got blood tested.
You weren't like the Milhouse of the team, were you? Like on the Simpsons?
I definitely was not.
Oh, okay, good.
But it also was like, they did tell us that high levels of caffeine were considered a performance enhancing drug and would result in disqualification if they found it in us. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a conversation to be had about whether or not the rules are out of date and maybe should be updated. But I think the bigger point is she knew what the rules were. She still broke them. And whether or not they are up to date and with the times or not doesn't matter. They are still the rules.
Yeah, we could tell that Tokyo is kind of way more behind the times than anyone ever thought, especially with those cardboard beds. But
and it's not just Tokyo. This is the IOC. This is the International Olympic Committee.
That's what I was getting to on top of that. And then the other thing is, you brought up a point. She knew what the rules were, so maybe she didn't really want to go, and this was her good way out.
Well, and whatever her motivations were, I'm not going to get into that. But, you know, if you break the rules, regardless of how stupid the rules are, you shouldn't cry when you're subsequently disqualified. I think it's a tragedy that she's disqualified, because I agree. I think it's stupid that THC is classed as a drug that you can get disqualified for. But those are the rules.
Now, speaking of disqualifications, now this one I think we can – I hope everybody would get behind on this. Two women were disqualified for having too much testosterone in their system that was naturally occurring. That's the way they are. That's they DQ'd them. They're like, nope.
And see, that's a much harder situation, because in the past, testosterone supplements have been used as a performance enhancing drug. Yeah. And so they've had to make the rule that says, you know, if you have higher than a certain level of testosterone, that's considered an unfair advantage and you'll be deked. Mm-hmm. Now, it would be really nice if I would hope that there's a way that they could scientifically prove that this testosterone is theirs, but that might be really difficult to do, because at a, you know, cellular, or I guess not a cellular, at like a molecular level, testosterone is testosterone, whether it originates in their body or if it's injected, you know?
Yeah, I think the only reason why the news agencies pretty much believe them is because they have a history just for being athletes, especially at that caliber, of different health surveys and scans and so forth and tests that basically said, yeah, that's just who they are.
Right. And I'd say in that case, there might be some ways forward around that. There's, you know, appeal processes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And then you have the other hand of things, where I remember I used to be like, yeah, no performance enhancing drugs. Yeah, I got to keep the sport pure. But then this, I forget who I was listening to, but they were talking about, like, let's flip it around and say, well, if it's available, it obviously is available for everyone at this stage. So why not just say, forget it, allow it. Everybody has a chance to use it. Use it at your, you know, peril. Right. You're a big boy. And in certain instances, with careful care, which, you know, in professional sports, who knows what's going on there. But with careful care, some performance enhancing drugs are relatively safe. Yeah. And they said, why not just allow it at this point? Because it's no different than like, hey, I have this ability of working out this one way that we didn't know about before. So now I can do this.
Right. I think it's a slippery slope. And I think what you're looking at there is a philosophical difference. Okay. So like, there are people, and many people believe that they, you know, the Olympics should be about what the capabilities of the human body are.
Right.
And that specifically the human body unaided by something that changes it biologically. And you could make some pretty interesting arguments about what the difference is in terms of altering performance between a performance enhancing drug or a bio supplement of whatever you want to call it. Okay. Something that the athlete takes internally that changes how their body operates versus some of the technology that we use to enhance performance that is not internal to the body. So for instance, you know, you look at cyclists using streamlined aerodynamic bikes that are designed using wind tunnels, for instance. You look at swimmers using swimsuits that are specifically engineered to reduce drag and stuff like that. I think you can make a very interesting comparison between performance enhancing drugs and some of these technologies. But the overarching concern is to try to make the Olympics a contest between bodies in their sort of conditioned but not enhanced state, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and you make a very valid point, and especially if it being like it's kind of broken down in philosophical differences, and you may end up where
it's a philosophical, it turns into a philosophical difference, and it's like, yeah, on the one hand, you want to even the playing field whichever direction you go. So on the one hand, if you say no supplements, you're evening the playing field at the level of this is what the unenhanced human body who has been exhaustively trained should be able to do versus we're evening the playing field by saying every performance enhancement is open to every athlete. But the difference then becomes, you know, what wins the day. So on the one hand, if you're banning performance enhancing substances at all, the winner is the one with the most physical ability. On the other hand, if you're allowing performance enhancers, saying that these are available to everybody, what you're seeing then is the winner is the one that's most effectively able to make use of supplements.
Yeah. Yeah. And whose body can actually absorb it. Because even with creatine, certain people don't actually have don't feel the effects of creatine.
Right.
So with that being said, I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll have two leagues, one where it's like, yeah, anything goes. And then the other one is like, yeah, whatever. Because you have that with UFC, they try to make it anything goes, and that quickly stopped.
Right.
Yeah, like just
it's, you know, personally, maybe I'm unrealistic, but I'm enough of an optimist and enough of a classicist that I like seeing what the human body is capable of without enhancers.
There is something to that. There really is something to that. So to finish out our episode, because believe it or not, we're at an hour. to finish out our episode, one thing I wanted to let everybody know is to be safe out there. We have the Delta variant that's very, very contagious. If you haven't gotten your vaccination, yes, go get it. Don't believe the bullshit. Go out and get your vaccination. The Delta variant is 2 to 3 times more contagious, and apparently it's deadlier if you get your vaccination, 99.5%. Nope, that's not what I was looking at. I was looking at something else. Okay, this is actually a worse statistic I was looking at. Preliminary data, and this is from NPR. Preliminary data shows that in some U.S. states, 99.5% of COVID-19 deaths in the past few months were among people who weren't vaccinated. So it's kind of where I was going for. And 97% of those currently hospitalized with COVID-19 are unvaccinated, according to Walensky, who they interviewed. Now, why am I bringing that up besides I just want you to be safe? Because we're starting to go back to mass mandates, and we might end up going back to bar closures. So be safe, but also try to visit your local bar. You know, try to keep them open because,
while you can.
Yeah. I don't know. If we end up going through a closure again, I don't know if they're going to survive because every time when they try to give them a relief package, the rich end up taking it because the United States is in late stage capitalism, and we're in a
feudal because society. they can mm-hmm. they're allowed to.
Exactly. Yeah. Like Ruth's Steaks.
Yeah.
Ruth's Steakhouse. Anyway,
Make you weep.
Yeah. Anyways, be prepared for that and be careful out there. And don't forget to recommend us, follow us, subscribe to us. We got Twitter. We got Facebook. We got TikTok. We got Instagram with Ethan Amell Does Cocktails. We have the YouTube. We got pretty much everywhere you want to be. We are the American Express of podcasts.
We are everywhere except for LinkedIn.
Yeah. And
and watch, we'll be there by the end of the week.
And Shudder. We're not on Shudder. That's the horror-based one. But maybe we'll get on there and be like, hey, look, horror cocktails.
Hey.
And then right around the corner is school is starting for some people with August. I know I'm actually back to work with the union stuff. And then shortly after, it's going to be back to actual pretending I give a shit about the job. And
he said the silent out loud. He said the silent part out loud.
No, I love teaching the kids. It's everything else that's pain in the ass. But
yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. But anyway, I hope everybody takes care out there. Ethan, do you have any final thoughts?
I wish I had a coherent final thought, but I do not. I am spent.
How about your personal Twitter?
Yes, you can follow me. I am at NRPZookie with an IE.
Oh, and don't forget the show, because it's not listed on our outro.
Yes, yes. So my wife and I also do a cocktail video series where we teach you how to make cocktails. You can find that either on Twitter at E&M Cocktails, or you can find us on Instagram at E&M Do Cocktails.
Awesome. You can follow me at The Real Nick Morose. You can also check out that on my Instagram as well. I post up videos here and there of me practicing with the camera and sometimes some sneak peeks at Drunken Trail promo videos or whatever else I'm working on. So you can check me out at The Real Nick Morose on Instagram and on Twitter. Other than that, I hope you guys enjoyed our episode back from our little vacay, and there'll be some more content up as fast as we can. And also be on the lookout for more as far as merchandise. So you guys go ahead and take care, and we'll see you on the next episode.
You've been listening to the Drunken Trail Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite digital streaming service. Follow us on Facebook at The Drunken Trail, Twitter at Drunken Trail, and be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. As always, thank you for listening.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.